The next half an hour will be yours with Alf Rehn, who is here, I hope, because of the dangerous ideas that we represent. But let us hear what Alf has to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Delighted to be here, a pleasure. For those of you who have never met me before, never heard of me before, my name is Alf Rehn, and I'm a chair of management and organization at Åbo Akademi University, a little to the west of here. So it's nice to do some eastbound traveling, or as we in Finns call it, itämatkailua. I'm here for the very simple reason that I frequently disagree with Professor Seppä. Professor Seppä, good friend and delightful chap to have conversations with, specifically because we have the kind of disagreeing relationship in which we do not start from the assumption that productive academic or any other kind of intellectual engagements are born out of agreeing with each other, are born out of trying to find middle ground. Instead, we fight frequently about notions of imitation, innovation, ideology, and imagination. And I wanted to come here and say a few words about issues regarding art and science, issues regarding ideas, business or otherwise, issues regarding what our mission is at gatherings such as these, what we really are gathered here to do. Because I want to start by challenging the whole notion of an art of business creation. This is one of the things we've actually debated for a long time, art or science, and I have taken the position that I feel the discussion is suffering from greatly the fact that we use the term art and we use the term aesthetics as if we knew exactly what they mean and as if we had a clear connection to how these fields of knowledge, these fields of understanding actually work. And as if we already had processed all the important things that have been done within them. My esteemed colleague referenced To Kill a Mockingbird, a delightful American classic. Now, we of course all remember that when Harper Lee was writing To Kill a Mockingbird, she was working together with Truman Capote, a true genius, an odd genius, a queer genius in more ways than one, who tried to take something, non-fiction writing, and transform this into an entirely new kind of aesthetic experience. Truman Capote takes, not a business case, but a law case, a case of gruesome murder, and weaves through his non-fiction depiction of it, creating an entirely new kind of aesthetic experience, the non-fiction novel, the intermingling of different kinds of ways of portraying something. That is not the interesting bit. People have written stuff all through the ages. What is interesting about both Harper Lee and Truman Capote is the fact that they were not particularly liked by all people in their sphere. Truman Capote was derided by numerous people. He also continued to deride others. When Jack Kerouac wrote his brilliant On the Road, Truman Capote pointed out, that's not writing, that's typing. Truman Capote was accused of being a sycophant. He was accused of almost being a plagiarist. He was accused of taking great pleasure in other people's suffering. Why am I telling this? Because the story becomes interesting when we realize that aesthetics has through the ages, art has through the ages, not been about pretty things, but about debating what the limits of our knowledge is, debating what kind of representations we feel we should be looking at. This picture is a picture of academic art. Academic art being a specific form of art presented during the 19th century in which the great art academies, the art universities of Europe, were trying to condense years and years of artistic experimentation and debate regarding does color define line or does line define color, and create through this, and I kid you not, an algorithm of aesthetics, a true science of artistic depiction. We might look at this and go, well, it's kind of cute. and, well, it has naked ladies, and who doesn't like that? But if we look at this for a little more from our current vantage point, we'll probably say it's kitsch. It's not very good art. It's the kind of stuff you can buy in any tawdry little shop for very little money. It has its cherubs. It has its overuse of allegory. It's the kind of stuff you might see hanging at your grandma's. The academic artists, the educated artists, those who had gone through this methodic, organized, modeling school of art, were ruthlessly attacked by the impressionist, by the expressionist, by the surrealist, by the dadaist, by almost every school. Denigrated later as kitsch. But for a very long time, this was what was considered fine art. And still today, a lot of us, when we talk about art, we talk about things that are beautiful, things that somehow represent things in an aesthetically pleasing way, as we define it. We think of art and we see this kind of picture more or less. Compare with this, Andres Serrano's Piss Christ, in which Serranos takes his own urine, dunks a crucifix in it, and takes a picture. This is one of the most debated works of modern art there is. It is perfect for inciting almost every negative feeling we have. For those of us who are Christian, it will make us feel that this is blasphemous. This is something that actually is an affront unto God. For those of us who think that piss has no place in art, this is just disgusting. Ew! This is not art because it doesn't play nice. It doesn't present pretty pictures. It doesn't go with the algorithm. Yet I would contend that if we seriously want to talk of an art of business creation, this is 1,000 times, 10,000 times, 1,000,000 times more important than academic art could ever be. For me, the entire debate about art was always the fact it has never been about pleasing people. If you want to be pleased, go to a masseuse. If you want to be pleased, go to the people who will in no way challenge you, who will show you exactly the kind of kitsch, the crying children, the velvet paintings of Jesus that you happen to like. That's nice. It is the snack food, the fast food of art, and it is actually anti-progressive. Because then we're only talking about the things we already accept, we already know, the things that do not disturb us in the least. But art, real art, was never about this. Every true great artist has always come on the scene and been derided for being a hack, a sensationalist, and unable to draw, or worse. Picasso, who was one of the great draftsmen, if you actually go to a Picasso museum and see his early work, he could outdraw anyone in this room. He is a master drawer. But when he presents the ladies of Avignon, he wants to break with that. He just says, there is no point in continuing doing what we already know how to do. We need to find new forms of expression. We need to take art seriously and have it progress, have it develop. And it is not about redoing old skills. It is not, in the parlance of modern management thinking, best practice. And I think that we might be able to learn more from art than we think. That is, to say there is an art of business creation is a reference to the fact that truly great breakthroughs, truly great things actually come in shapes that will not be met with applause, will not be met by smiles and nods, will not be met by people saying, oh, that's nice, but rather will be laughed at, will be derided, will be thought to be just as disgusting as piss Christ. But since we are so interested in being liked, since we are so interested in being legitimate, since we are so interested in doing what is safe, we often forget this. So to me, the current debate that Marco and I have had about business creation is actually neither about science nor about art, but our difficulty in actually taking one of the two seriously. I am a theoretician. I am an academic. I do not make apologies for it. I get great pleasure from the most subtle and minute little philosophical things. I do my French philosophy, I do my social theory, and I can quote Slavoj Žižek for hours. I'm happy there. I know it is not enough. I know that quoting weird philosophers does not create businesses. I have created a few businesses, so I know how to do that as well. But I'm happy there, and I think there is a space for that. But I also think there is a space for the art. But that space needs to be seen as art, as revolutionary, as radical, as absolutely and utterly creative. And I use creative here in the strongest possible way that it can be. For if we consider the great business models, if we consider the great businesses, these were not born to applause. Amazon, utterly derided. Jeff Bezos, considered a moron or worse. Great difficulties in finding anyone who would think that kind of business model would work. He points out in one interview, if I would have a dollar for every person who said this wouldn't work, I would have made more money off that than of Amazon. IKEA, the great Nordic business model, a business model that today looks like the most genial thing ever, having worked a little with the top management there and having been able to see what kind of percentages they actually make, that's one good business model. But what happened when IKEA was launched? What happened when IKEA was presented? Was it accepted as this great thing for Sweden? Was it accepted as this brilliant business model? No. It was laughed at. Ingvar Kamprad, today patron saint of entrepreneurs in Sweden, was not allowed into the furniture fair. When he started, he was not allowed to present his furniture at the furniture fair because it was not furniture. That was cheap shit in a box. And the furniture fair isn't there for cheap shit in a box. Just like we often respond to modern art by saying, that's not art, because it's not pretty, and it doesn't talk to my current ideas of what is pretty. The furniture industry reacted exactly in the same way to IKEA, pointing out this is not what furniture should be. And there is a representative of the furniture industry who said something along the lines of, I don't think it'll work because there are not enough social cases in Sweden to make it work. And we laugh at him because how could you say something so stupid? Because he belonged to an aesthetic theory. Because he belonged to a school. He belonged to the school where true furniture making was about being proud of what you did, building something that would last, taking design seriously, looking at your chair and going, I made that. And then comes this peasant who says, I don't care about design. Quality, screw that. I want to take cheap shit and put them in a flat bag and sell that like hot dogs. Wonder why they didn't like him. Crocs, the ugliest product ever devised by man, becoming a gazillionaire success story during an age where everyone says design matters for everything. During an age where everyone says it has to be innovative and have new functions, it has to be sustainable, that is not made out of something that will never, never, never leave the planet and actually be here after all the humans are gone, and it has to be pretty, and they launch a series of completely and utterly uninnovative plastic shoes that are ugly as heck and become successes. That is, of course, the entire genius of business creation. That truly revolutionary, truly radical businesses go against our assumptions. They go against our models, and they will always do so. Of course, we're here talking about saving the planet, and I've had the great pleasure to have at least some workings with Jonas and the Grameen Bank. I was among the people who published his book in Swedish. And he points out, when he talks about the Grameen Bank, that nobody believed him. Pointed out, that will never work. Lending money at almost no interest to women, rural women, idiot, moron, that will never work. Why don't you do something proper, like start a call center? The entire history of innovation has been this. The entire history of innovation is actually similar to the history of art. But where the history of art has been about schools being created, schools that have fought other schools. The history of business creation and innovation has so far been far more individual focused. Far more individual focused. Now we gather here under the banner of the art of business creation. And this is my challenge to Marco. He knew I was going to do this, so he's taking it on the chin. If this is actually to be something, if this is actually to go somewhere, what we need to start to do, is actually learn from art. Learn how the truly radical schools created themselves as schools, how they gathered, issued manifestos, issued statements about the former rule, pointed out why this was a different aesthetics, a different experience, a different way of understanding art than the previous ones. They clarified and they explained the aesthetics they were working with. They did not just demand, you have to hear us, you have to see us, because we paint in this kind of way. No. They understood that revolutionaries always have to be explaining as well. They will never fully succeed. They will never fully cover everything. But they need to do this. Otherwise, we will become prisoners of our best intentions. We will think we're doing one thing, but in fact, we will get stuck in specific aesthetics. We'll get stuck in specific ideas. We will not really be able to utilize all this radical possibility that our new art might have. And we need also to do what artists throughout the ages have done, look at our new art and say, can we not go further? Can we not take this further? Because the great artists, they did not get caught in their models. They did not get caught in their representations. Looking at Picasso, he did actually develop cubism almost throughout his life. He started, of course, with the Dames d'Avignon, the Ladies of Avignon, a simplistic, almost naivist piece influenced by African representations. But throughout his career, he experiments with different kinds of cubism, never stopping back and looking at his former art and saying, this is enough, this is how we paint it now. Towards the end of his career, he actually seems to be criticizing very heavily the start of his own career. I threw up, fuck freemium, screw social, not because I dislike freemium business models, not because I dislike social, not because sustainability wouldn't be a good idea, but because I believe that if you want to take the idea, art of business creation, seriously, we cannot let ourselves be caught by any one term, any one idea, any one notion of model or true path ahead. We cannot do what academic art try to do, that is, formalize and theorize disruption as if it was a thing. This was one of the great criticisms that was made of academic art, that it transmuted and reduced art to a thing, to a model, to fill in the blanks, to paint by colors. Now, of course, we know that there are many around us even who would want to do this with business modeling as well. We have people creating business model innovation maps, business model innovation canvases, business model innovation this and that. Okay, they can work as tools, just like the brushes of the artist work as the tool for the artist. But if we believe that these are what our new art is about, we have fundamentally misunderstood what the term art means. Art never stands still. Art never sticks to a model. Art never believes that it's finished. And art never, ever sticks to just seeing what it wants to see. One of the great things for somebody like me, who's interested in innovation, interested in creativity, interested in development, is to actually look at art, not to see the techniques, but to look at what is painted, what is represented. Toulouse-Lautrec, arguably one of the greatest French painters throughout time, painted whores, drunkards, thieves, and was therefore considered a gutter artist. He didn't want to paint the ladies of the great houses, with whom he was actually related, but wanted instead to take his art to where it meant something for him, to where he could bring in a little disruption, and where he could take a Parisian street whore and turn her into art. I'm not claiming here that your job now should be to go to Parisian street whores, because I think if I did, that would be illegal, even in liberal Finland. But I'm saying that we need to be better at seeing also those things we do not want to see. Now we look at things such as disruption. We talk of things as a sustainable development. And we always, always, always talk about China. But there has to be more. And there is more. So the real task for the artist of business creation is, of course, not to look at the things everyone else looks at. In Finnish parlance, not to look for neither the next Nokia nor the next Rovio, but to look for the company nobody expects to be turning up. Look for the thing nobody is looking for. Look for the thing that actually seems completely impossible today. My esteemed colleague started by talking a little bit about... No, he didn't start. But in the middle of his speech, he talked a little bit about Steve Jobs. I mentioned a very important word, namely imagination. This pyramid is Brennan's model of thinking. If you forget that and think it's Alfrén's model of thinking, I'm okay with that, because it's a brilliant model. I really wish I thought of it first. In it, Brennan has tried to argue that when we look at things such as creativity and innovation, we are very much stuck here. We are always working with a base of reflex, the way we always talk about these things. We're very occupied with problem solving because it talks to our desire to execute, to do the right things. And we may, at times, talk about creativity, but we like to keep creativity in the sphere it belongs, working with things we already know, things we're already comfortable with. But Brennan and I claim that if you want to reach the full potential of human thinking, the only important thing is the path towards imagination. Now, imagination is a tricky word. Imagination sounds pink and girly. It sounds like it's all about bunnies and unicorns farting rainbows. But imagination, in Brennan's and my understanding, is actually an extremely dangerous idea. Because imagination is letting go of what we already know. It's letting go of the model we're comfortable with. It's letting go of those things we hold dear and think that are true and good and pure. It is looking at your own business model and say, what if this is just repeating old shit? What if this is just... That was a stupid button to press. What if this is just one more of those best practices? Because I hate best practices. I loathe best practices. Best practices are just code word for shit that used to work. Best practice is the last refuge of the unimaginative. Best practice is what art never does. Can you imagine an artist coming, well, I work with best practices and here's my painting. He would be laughed out of the city. I hate blue oceans. Because blue oceans kind of tell us, yes, the next new thing will be not in the red ocean where there are sharks and they're going to eat you and tear you apart, but in the blue ocean, which is going to be calm and completely undisturbed and everything's going to be fine, and somewhere in the distance there is a little island with a half-naked man, woman, or both, depending on your preference. I hate these terms. I hate terms like these because they train us to think that it's about the controllable, the knowable, that which we're already used to. It trains us to think that there wouldn't be a great beyond, that there wouldn't be a step to take, a further step, a step to truly shake up the world in just the way same way the cubists did, and the same way Piss Christ did. I believe in an imagination economy, not a knowledge economy. Not a knowledge economy. Because a knowledge economy is an economy building on historical knowledge. Building on what we already know, what we're already comfortable with. I want an imagination economy. One building on discomfort. One building on what the fuck. One building on how that's supposed to work. I want an imagination economy because I want to see the kind of truly radical companies, the kind of companies like IKEA, and like actually Apple when they started out, that can actually shake up our understanding not only what does business mean, but what does economy overall mean. And this cannot be reached by consensus. It cannot be reached by trying to explain, yes, yes, we're doing that, but kind of different. It can be reached if we actually accept the challenge of the notion of an art of business creation and truly see this as an art, not as an art as code word for, well, stuff we can't really explain. Not art if that means, well, pretty things, but art as the continuous search for new things to see, the continuous search beyond simple base prudishness, beyond the this is comfortable, this is what I'm going to stick with. The great artists were truly imaginative because they could not only see other things people hadn't seen, but things people couldn't even believe you could represent in art. Today he has, of course, become kitsch as well. But if you look at the great works of Salvador Dalí, who portrays the female form as a wardrobe, in whose world clocks take on the shape and suppleness of fried eggs, who did not balk from painting the dirty, the disgusting, the weird, the nightmarish. That is the kind of companies I would like to see created. Not the kind of companies where Tekes goes, oh, that's nice, but the kind of companies that disturb and shock, the kind of companies that create hate mails. Some 2 years ago, I can't remember exactly the date, I was interviewed by Helsingin Sanomat and asked, where does the next Nokia come from? This question that Finns have been occupied with for so long. And I pointed out this is a meaningless question. It's a completely inane question. It is like asking, where will we find the next Kekkonen, or for the Americans, the next Reagan? And no, Rick Perry ain't him. And I said, no, we need to look somewhere else. And whatever comes, whatever weird thing comes, it's going to be something that's so unlike Nokia, that looks so profoundly different, that we will not initially accept that might be it. And she says, well, can you tell me an example? Well, I can't really tell you an example about something I say you can't tell that it's going to be something. I mean, I'm just going to look foolish because I'm going to tell you about something that probably will fail. Because if I say tell you something about something that will succeed, that would actually miss the point. Yeah, yeah, but can you give some example, please? Well, I can't give you an example. I can explain what I'm trying to say. We need to look for the weird things, the things we really don't think will work. And let me take just one example. And I had, since I have very bad memory, I had been playing a game with my son. And I say, well, this clearly won't manage. This clearly won't do. But I bet that the next big Finnish company will look a little like that weird company in Helsinki that makes this stupid, trivial game in which you throw little birds at green pigs. I didn't say Rovio would be a success long before they were a success by being smart. No, I just said it because that was the most unlikely thing I could think of at the moment. It was also one of the things I had to be playing at the moment. And that's not even the interesting bit of the story. The following day after the interview was published, I'll open my mailbox. Every time in the media I get a couple of hate mails. I know Finnish hate mail culture pretty well by now. And regardless of what I say, I can basically say that we should be killing babies, and I will get 3 or 4 hate mails. Regardless if I say killing babies or maybe Hesburger should use less mayonnaise, the same 3 or 4 mails. When I suggested that a stupid IT company who makes a stupid iPhone game might be the next big thing rather than Nokia, I got more than 50 hate mails. More than 50. 50. Most of them were calm and collected and pointed out that I was A, an idiot, B, a moron, and C, should stop being a professor this moment since I clearly had excrement for brains. But most also pointed out, Finland has been built by high tech. It will continue to be built by high tech. And no kind of stupid game will ever change that, you idiot. That was the point when I started believing in Rovio. Because I realized if it's so annoying, it can engender 50 hate mails, there might be something behind it. It might even be art. Thank you.